Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the California Coastal Commission. Vanessa, would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Baker.
Here.
Commissioner Brownsey.
Present.
Commissioner Gibson.
I saw him.
Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Howell.
Here.
Commissioner Pendleton.
Here.
Commissioner Peskin.
Present.
Commissioner Sundberg.
Here.
Commissioner Vargas.
Here.
Chair Bochco.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. So let's go over agenda changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we get going on agenda changes, just want to ask members of the audience that plan to speak today to fill out a speaker slip and turn that into a staff member. And also, if you have a mobile phone, please silence that while you're in the meeting room so you don't disturb the meeting. As far as agenda changes, we have item 9A, which is application 517-272, the Metropolitan Water District. That's moved to consent, and that is a new addition to the item, the agenda changes this morning. Item 10A, which is application 514-1221A1, this is the Orange County Dana Point Harbor amendment. This is a move to consent. And then item 14A, which is the Credowitz matter, that was postponed. And that concludes the agenda changes.
Thank you very much. So we'll have roughly a half hour of public comment this morning. I have a few speaker slips here. So I'll start with Mark Fudge, who has one person seating time. So we usually do 3 minutes, so do you need six?
I'll probably be done much quicker than
that. Okay.
Yep. I have a couple slides. That's good. Okay. I'm come before you this morning. I'm Mark Fudge, and I'm from Laguna Beach. My wife spoke yesterday and had a number of projects presented to you. I'm here today to offer my support to the staff's decision for how to proceed on one of these projects. The project that we're going to be talking about is 31941 Coast Highway. And the project description is on the slide. It's the demolition and construction of a two-car garage, what would appear to be a very minor project. The city is making its pattern or practice to diminish these descriptions of the projects, and it causes a lot of problems. I'm going to bring up the next slide. This is the project for the minor permit that was before them. The project has gone long past the parameters of the description. So staff sent a letter last week to Greg Post, the Director of Community Development, saying that the project doesn't appear to meet the description and has gone past the permitting requirements, and invited him to have the discussion. That house in the previous picture was the one up on Pacific Coast Highway. This is an A-frame on the beach. And they were going to place a major structural element. And at this point, it's a complete reconstruction. This is the stairway to the beach that was to be repaired. It's been completely replaced with a brand new facility. The problem is that they came in and had a CDP and had a hearing with that description, and staff was unable to make the determination what the project actually was, and it went by without any public input from me or anyone else. They came back and had a subsequent CDP for some additional work for some caissons. I did appeal that, and you found that project had a substantial issue in February of this year. The letter that staff is presenting to the Director of Community Development is highlighting this problem. And the problem is noticing that we rely on the municipalities, we rely on everyone that's doing a project to make it clear what that project is so the public can participate. And without that participation, it's not transparent, and it doesn't withstand scrutiny after the fact. It's frustrating when a city has an LCP that's been certified, where they've entered into a contract with the commission and with the public that they are going to hear these items, they're going to apply the LCP fairly, and when they fail to, and as far as when they fail to have a project description match the work that they're contemplating, it causes an immense amount of work with staff to bring that project back into compliance. I think I missed one critical slide. The other problem with this project is the beach house is actually on the sand. It's an A-frame structure that was built in the 60s. And with the time frame I have today, I just don't know that I can contemplate describing it sufficiently. Needless to say, it's not a clean project. It has its problems. And staff is going back and correcting the notification and bringing it back into compliance. And I completely support that. I would also support that our city of Laguna Beach honor their LCP, because we're a small city and the projects that I bring forth take up too much of your time, and I shouldn't be here. The city should be reviewing these projects and doing a better job so that the public has some confidence that they're being reviewed properly. So I support staff, and we'll see how this one proceeds. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. My name is Dan Jordy, County Supervisor for here in Fort Bragg. And along with the next two speakers, I'd like to thank the Commission for its leadership in providing coastal access here on the Mendocino Coast, working with the California Coastal Conservancy and State Parks. And we wanted to draw the next two speakers, and I would like to draw your attention to the McCarricker State Park and the California Coastal Trail that runs through McCarricker State Park right here into Fort Bragg city limits. The Hall Road has historically been the most popular coastal trail on the Mendocino Coast, in large part because it was an off-road highway for logging trucks. And so it has 14 feet on average of paved asphalt. But unfortunately, funding has not been made available in the past to resurface that. And so, as you'll hear from the next two speakers, it's really now becoming a collection of potholes. And so what happens is, even though its width draws cyclists to that trail, draws pedestrians, and normally allows for no user conflicts due to the width. Now with all the potholes, you have both pedestrians and the cyclists all funneling into the areas where there are no potholes, and now you do have user conflicts. And again, what makes this part of the coastal trail so unique, which is about 2.5 miles long from the Pudding Creek Trestle into just north of Ward Avenue, is the fact that it is 14 feet wide, and it normally allows for bicyclists to ride in pairs. As you know, walking and cycling is a social activity. People enjoy talking to each other side by side when they're riding in their bikes, when they're walking, and so they tend to spread out. And so what we're trying to do with the next two speakers, and I'll cut it short here, is just draw your attention to the fact that we really would love to see state funding made available, perhaps through the Conservancy, working with State Parks to resurface it at its full width of 14 feet, because it really is a unique part of the California Coastal Trail. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm Ron Bloomquist and Ed Oberweiser. Are you both going to speak to this? Okay, great. Each have 3 minutes.
Okay, good morning. My name is Ron Bloomquist. I'm a resident of Fort Bragg. 7 years ago, a friend of mine and I started a local bicycle club named the SOBs, Seniors on Bikes, or some of us have discovered short of breath. Currently, we have 40 members who ride when they can. On average, we have 10 to 12 riders every day. We ride a basic 16-mile route every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Last year, we rode a total of 41,840 miles. The city's Noyo Headland Trail is a wonderful asset for bikers and hikers, but unfortunately, the worst part of the walk and ride is the broken asphalt and potholes from the Pudding Creek Trestle to the north end of the Hall Road on Ward Avenue. This former railroad is now belongs to State Park. The Hall Road is a beautiful ride along the Pacific Ocean, but the broken blacktop and potholes require constant attention. Hopefully, because the State Park Hall Road is also part of the Pacific Coast Trail and also includes part of the Adventure Cycling bicycle route from Vancouver, Canada to San Diego, it would seem funds would be available to help resurface the Hall Road. We SOBs have complained to the state parks many times, but some of us older riders are starting to wonder if state parks will ever get around to resurfacing the Hall Road before we die. I have plans to have my ashes mixed with concrete to repair a few potholes if it doesn't happen. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, please come up.
Hi, I want to welcome the commissioners to Fort Bragg and thank you for coming to our small community. My name is Ed Obweiser, and I'm a 10-year resident of Fort Bragg, and I'm also a member of Seniors on Bikes. We encourage people to ride their bicycles and ride safely, and we lead a ride every day along that Hall Road. We had the path is a wonderful asset for our community. It's a great tourist attraction. It's a beautiful road that goes right along the beach, and it will really help our town's economy. The organization responsible for the care and maintenance is State Parks, and we have complained to them numerous times about the condition of the Hall Road, and the only response we got was that they tried to get a grant 5 years ago to resurface it. They have not answered any of my other requests about it. The entire path needs to be resurfaced. It's definitely unsafe for new bicyclists, which we're seeing more of around here, and women, you know, trying to pass each other, as Dan mentioned before, people trying to pass each other. It's very dangerous. Women strolling there with their baby carriages, older people are trying to get some exercise, walking, and it's in danger. One of our members got hurt very badly in a crash and had to be hauled off by the paramedics. I encourage the commission to communicate with State Parks and help them find funding to resurface this road before California finds itself subject to a lawsuit by somebody claiming damages caused by the poor condition of the path. I've sent a more extensive note to all of you, Commissioner Sandberg and to the staff about this, along with some photos showing the condition. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Michelle Roberts? Michelle here?
She ceded her time to me.
I'm sorry?
She ceded her time to me.
I ceded my time to
me. And who is me?
Leslie Kashiwada.
Okay, come on up. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, they weren't attached. Oh. So you want 6 minutes?
Actually, I've had three people cede their time to me. I probably need 7 or 8 minutes.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you do. Thank you.
Honored members of the California Coastal Commission, thank you so much for coming to our beautiful coast and welcome. You've had some wonderful weather here. My name is Leslie Kashiwada, and I last came before you on October 5th of 2016, so almost 2 years ago. I came on behalf of the Citizens for Appropriate Coastal Land Use. we go by CACLU, to speak about the ill-advised plan to build a shopping center in the coastal zone west of Highway 1 near the corner of Highway 20, just south of where you are right now. And your staff prepared this wonderful map, and it is Project 12 on Map 5. Today I'd like to give you a brief update about the Hare Creek Shopping Center. To briefly review what I spoke about in October of 2016, the original 2015 project proposed to scrape off all of Todd Hill, but this project was denied. Developers worked with city and coastal commission staff to address the concerns expressed by the community, by the city council, and by the coastal commission. The developers came out with a slightly smaller revised project that was narrower and longer, proposing to remove the east side of Todd Hill and separating the strip of buildings into three separate buildings and setting them back from the highway. So it's still a major landform transformation that's being proposed. However, many of the details of the project were not completely defined. And despite this muddled project plan, the city put out bids for an environmental impact report and awarded the contract to the lowest bidder, Michael Baker International. Members of CACLU, which requested a complete, accurate, and up-to-date EIR, expressed concern about the proposed scope of work, including the plan to rely on the developers and the city for certain studies. As we feared, the draft EIR was not complete, accurate, or up-to-date. Rather, it was deficient and indefensible. In particular, the draft EIR determined that there were no significant impacts with mitigation, except for traffic. CACLU vehemently disagrees with this assessment. The draft EIR continued to rely on outdated studies with mostly superficial peer reviews saying the studies were still valid. The most rigorous of the updates was the geotechnical study, which included six new soil borings, adding to the 24 done in 1995. However, the new study relied heavily on the 1995 study, which contained the following statement on page 21. Although the time for this review is strictly arbitrary, it is suggested that 2 years be considered a reasonable time frame for the usefulness of this report. The fieldwork for this study was done more than 22 years ago. The biological resources study included 1 day of walking around the site, and I know some of you walked the site yesterday, so about that level of scrutiny, and mostly referenced the previous study where minimal surveys were conducted in 2012. 3 years is considered the accepted shelf life for these kinds of studies, so it is well past its use-by date. The traffic study reanalyzed data collected in 2015 on off-peak days, despite our request that a new study be done in a more appropriate timing. This list identifies just three instances of reliances on out-of-date studies. There are numerous others, and some studies were not done at all. And some studies weren't released to the public for review, including a study by the city on its water supply resources. How can the public adequately evaluate the impact of a project if much of the data is out of date or not even available? When data were available, often the conclusions reached did not match the facts on the ground, and very few impacts were identified. Repeated claims of no impact were either not supported by the data or there were no data. What impacts were identified were remediated with mitigation measures that often didn't address the actual impacts. In addition, most of the mitigation measures were illusory, deferred, and poorly defined. The one significant impact that was identified was traffic, and the draft EIR said that the impact could not be mitigated. This conclusion was reached using a reanalysis of an out-of-date and incomplete traffic study, as I mentioned before. No traffic study was done on Ocean View Drive, which would be the only access to the proposed Hare Creek Shopping Center. This street is the main access to Todd Point Residences, the Coastal Bluffs, and Pomo Bluffs Park, with other access points being undeveloped. In this regard and others, the plans for the Hare Creek Shopping Center are in conflict with LCP policies and the city general plan. The Coastal Commission is charged with protecting and enhancing California's coast and ocean through careful planning and regulation. CACLU believes that the Hare Creek Shopping Center has the potential for significantly impacting coastal resources because it will cause degradation of visual resources on both sides of Highway 1, restriction of a major wildlife corridor between Jackson Demonstration State Forest and the coast, restriction of daily access to residences, to educational facilities, and to the coast itself, will preclude events and event parking held on or near Todd Hill for residences and visitors, including Paul Bunyan Day's events, the Zopi Family Circus, the Flynn Creek Circus, the Lions Club Annual Carnival, the Kite Festival, just to name a few. It will preclude overflow parking for events nearby for residences and visitors, including Wine Song, the annual Salmon Barbecue, Fourth of July Fireworks, Abalone Cook-Off, and MAPA events, to name a few. Potential reduction in groundwater recharge and unknown impact on local wells, especially given sea level rise, which was not addressed. Potential input of toxins for stormwater runoff, especially to Hare Creek, a Class 1 salmon stream. Given the inadequacy of the draft EIRs, as it was written, members of CACLU and other concerned citizens requested that a revised draft EIR be presented to the public for another round of comment. And you have, some of you, I only provided 10 copies, have those attachments, and I will be sending electronic copy to staff so that you will have it available to you. Regardless of the course of the CEQA process, CACLU believes this project in any form is inappropriate for this site. Some of the blame for this can be attributed to the current zoning. As long as the city allows for commercial highway development along the Highway 1 corridor, especially on the west side of Highway 1, projects of this type will continue to be proposed. In addition, the Hare Creek Shopping Center will bring in at least one more franchise business, the grocery outlet Bargain Market, and potentially three or more. This trend will continue to destroy Fort Bragg's unique character and reduce it to a far-flung extension of the miles of strip malls in the Bay Area. I encourage Coastal Commission staff to work with city staff and the developers to produce zoning and planning, which will enhance the community along its entire coastal zone through economically sustainable development that builds community identity, community resilience, and responsiveness to climate chaos. This kind of development represented by the Hare Creek Shopping Center does not accomplish any of these goals. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Mary Rose Kazarski, Kazarovsky.
Good morning again, and thank you for hanging in there with us. My name is Mary Rose Kazarovsky, and as you heard, these past 3 days, the public counts on all of you to protect our coastal and historic resources, open space, ecosystems, habitat. So thank you for your work, and your scrutiny and oversight is incredibly appreciated. I hope you continue to ensure that our state laws are followed as applicants appear before you. The public trust is at stake here. And please discern that the data you receive is accurate and complete, because many of the projects that have come before you, the public has pointed out some important information with very good data to show that some of these projects need your scrutiny. I also wanted to shout out for state parks. I worked as a visitor services at one of the state parks. And please do what you can. State parks is underfunded, underpaid, the workers work part-time, seasonal. It's really hard to make a living as a state park aide or maintenance. They do an incredible amount of work. The visitors appreciate them. Help California appreciate them, too. Thank you.
Thank you. And Steve Ray. It's 6 minutes.
And I have donated time.
Right. You get 6 minutes.
Thank you. Well, good morning, Chair Bochco, Commissioners. I'm Steve Ray, Executive Director of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. Just as a preface to my remarks, I'm going to be speaking on LCP amendments generally. I will not, however, be addressing any of the specific ones that are before you today, so you don't need to worry. I won't wander into that territory. In 1976, when the state legislature passed the Coastal Commission, they placed in there a provision for local jurisdictions, the cities and the counties along the coast, to be closely involved in the administration of the Coastal Act through local coastal plans. And over the years, many of the cities and counties along the state have done that. It's amazing that 43 years or 42 years later, that there are still some geopolitical jurisdictions in the state that have not complied with that provision of the Act. And I know that the steps are being taken toward that end, and I hope that works out. Now, I think the legislative intent there was that having local officials and local governments involved in this process would enhance the enforcement, the regulation of the Coastal Act. And that's a good intent. However, in practice, there has been, it hasn't always followed the course. Fortunately, when they created these LCPs, they also created this commission to provide statewide oversight of the process and of all of the regulations to ensure that where you have original jurisdiction, that you apply it, but where you have appellate jurisdiction, that you have a chance and the public is afforded an opportunity to raise issues and bring them to you for clarification or for adjudication. And that has worked very well over the years. But I'm here to talk about a disturbing trend, and I want to address it before it becomes part of the practice of the local jurisdictions. And that is the two aspects of this trend. One is the ignoring the LCPs in local jurisdictions. Now, yesterday you had an absolutely excellent presentation by Sharon Fudge about the city of Laguna Beach and their, I would almost say, wanton disregard for their LCP and for ensuring the regulation and enforcement of the Coastal Act. This morning, Mark Fudge addressed that same issue on one particular point. That is happening more and more as we go up and down the coast. That's why we still see appeals coming to you, because the local jurisdictions are not performing under the provisions of their LCPs. They choose to ignore them. The second aspect is the amendments to LCPs. And some amendments are necessary. State laws change, accessory dwelling units, things like that, cannabis regulations that require cities to amend their LCPs to conform with those laws, and that's absolutely necessary. Sometimes there are just like little niggling mistakes that were made in the process and stuff like that that need to be corrected, and that's great. That's what that process is for. But lately there's been a trend to try to force issues before this commission in amendments that serve to enhance the authority of the local jurisdictions and to weaken the regulation or enforcement of the Coastal Act. And that is happening more and more. An example is the city of Newport Beach. Now, city of Newport Beach has a relatively brand new LCP. They have already brought to you several amendments to that brand new LCP. Which indicates that they either goofed in the first place with it, or that they are now trying to change aspects of it to give them more authority or to weaken the Coastal Act. I would contend that the latter may be at play here as in this case. They have submitted several, I think about five, that have come to this commission so far. However, they are submitting them now in batches, and they will. The intent of many of those will be to weaken the Coastal Act and enhance their local authority to skirt by some of the regulations of the Coastal Act. we would ask that the staff and this commission be very vigilant in reviewing these LCPs, not just in for Newport Beach, but elsewhere. Maybe Laguna Beach might be coming up with some. I know in San Diego County, some of the jurisdictions in San Diego County are coming forward with these kind of amendments too. So we would caution the staff, caution the commission to please take a close look at these. We will be looking at them, not just at the Banning Ranch Conservancy, but we are talking to coastal advocates and coastal watchdogs up and down the coast about this issue, and it is gaining recognition among all of us that this is something that we have to keep monitoring. So we will be talking to you more about this in the future, but in the meantime, please be careful of what comes your way. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any more speaker slips. Is there anyone I missed? Okay, great. So I'll come back to staff.
Madam Chair, before we jump into the next item, which is the budget update, we wanted to highlight another Coastal Trail video, and it's the Hall Road portion of the Coastal Trail, which is just located north of the Noyo Headlands Trail, which Supervisor Gurdy and the SOBs just highlighted. Sorry. I want to join that club. Anyhow, and with regard to the issues with regard to maintenance of those roads, that is a legitimate criticism, and maintaining trails and bikeways is an ongoing issue. And so with the passage of Prop 68 and the gas tax, there shouldn't be monies available coming forward for those types of maintenance. Assuming the gas tax isn't repealed in November. So why don't we get started, Billy, if you can hit the video.
Across this bridge, I think about all the childhood times I had playing on the beach, swimming in Pudding Creek, and being able to climb on the trestle. As we look west, you can see the main Pudding Creek beach as well as a trail system that goes along the bluff. We're standing on the Wesley Chesbrough Pudding Creek Trestle, which is in the southern portion of McCarricker State Park. The trestle was created during the logging era when there was a train trestle put in to allow trains carrying logs from the 10-mile watershed to go all the way to the mill in the center of town. That train was in place from 1917 until 1949 when it was converted into a road to haul logs via logging truck. The trail that we're standing on is pedestrian and bicycle access only, but to the locals it was known as the Haul Road because of the historic use with the logging trucks. And even on the weekends when it was closed down for logging trucks, the company allowed locals to drive up and down the road to get access to the beach, the good surfing spots, the great areas to go fishing along the coast. After the use by the logging company, the trestle itself was chained off and boarded off because it was unsafe for people to be on it. And it remained that way until State Parks was able to receive funding to do a restoration project and transform this old logging trestle into a great recreational opportunity for the town. The trestle was a great addition because it allowed people to be able to access the town of Fort Bragg without having to go alongside the highway, and they could safely access it through this pedestrian bicycle-only trestle. I grew up in this area just north of Fort Bragg in the small community of Clio, California. When we rode our bike, we'd be able to come all the way down the logging road, but once we got to the trestle, we'd have to get onto Highway 1 and cross the Pudding Creek Bridge with vehicle traffic, which was the most dangerous part of the whole trip. We were always cautious and took a big sigh of relief once you got to the other side of the bridge. This is the most used trail in the Mendocino County. The Fort Bragg City Trail has recently done a survey, and on holiday weekends, they get as many as 12,000 people per day using the trail. More people than in the town of Fort Bragg. This trail has a little bit of something for everyone. We've got the beautiful white sand beaches of Pudding Creek and Virgin Creek. We've got the lookouts, the amazing fishing and diving opportunities off of Laguna Point, black sand beaches north to the 10-mile beach, and then from there, over 3 miles of unspoiled beaches that you can walk all the way to the 10-mile river mouth. And then at the very south end of the park is the world-famous Glass Beach, which was once the town dump, and the wave action has created all the broken glass into jewels of polished glass. Glass Beach is the number one attraction for the city of Fort Bragg. People do come from all around the world. It's listed in the world's top 10 beaches regularly. It's a very popular attraction. It is pupping season for the harbor seals, so a lot of times people that get lucky on a day can go out there and actually see newborn harbor seals on the rocks.
Three days ago, I counted 120 adults out here and 25 pups.
Really?
So that was the most I've seen this pupping season out there. The most we've ever counted on one confirmed sighting was 54 pups. That was 3 years ago. But there are 54 pups on the beach here, taking up all three beaches in the rookery.
I think that's why it's so critical to have you and the volunteers out here keeping an eye on it and making sure we let the public know what the
You know, it used to be that we were... I felt like mostly what we did was protect the seals from the public.
Yeah.
Now it's the people have got it. I mean, there's not as many dogs off leash as there used to be. There's not as many fishermen that insist on fishing in the rookery. Why anybody would want to, I don't know. But there's lots of people interested from all over the world that come through here, and you get to talk to them. I even know how to pronounce seal in German now. You know? It's a great space to be in and spend a few quiet hours, you know.
Right.
It's my Zen time out here.
Not a better office in the world.
That's really nice. Very beautiful.
That is a really special part of the Coastal Trail. And you may have recognized Lauren Rex, who was here yesterday.
Yeah.
The State Parks
sector
superintendent. Yeah, hard to miss. Yeah. Moving on to our next really exciting item is the budget update, and Susan Hanch will present that item.
Thank you for that introduction. I don't know how exciting I can make it. Today I'm going to give you a very brief verbal report. I posted a very detailed written report that was dated August 31st that it was attached to your meeting information. And I do recommend that as one if you have questions to keep it. It gives a history of the last few budgets in detail, also a history back to the very beginning of the Coastal Act of every year we've ever had a budget. So it's every sort of answers every question I think that you would have. But today I just want to highlight a few things. And I also have copied for you this one green sheet that is the summary of the current budget that just started. And I want to start off by thanking the Budget Subcommittee, Commissioners Groom and Commissioners Luevano, who have been working closely with me, meeting at the meetings and going over some of the major points of the budget and giving me and Jack advice on input from commissioners. And I also want to offer that the budget is, the state budget process is fairly complicated and set with all sorts of sort of special structures and rules. And I'm happy to meet with any individual commissioner that wants to go over things and understand or have questions about anything specific. So we're at that time of the year when we're in three budgets. We're finishing out the budget that just ended, the 17-18 budget. We finished that budget within the budget. We're in what's called the closeout period. And this is our first year at the commission of being in the new fiscal accounting system full force. And so we're closing that budget out with the fiscal system, which is, when you move to a new accounting system, is quite challenging. And it's a process of many, many extra steps. And so the whole staff's getting used to their work on the budget or getting used to those steps. We're not done with our closing. Many other agencies are not done with closing either. We usually try to finish by the end of August. We think we'll be finished by the end of September. But we're working closely with finance, and they know everything that's going on. We're within the budget. There were no issues of any overage or any of those issues. It's just merely a matter of switching to this new system. So then the budget that we're in right now that just started, this 18-19 budget, that this is the green sheet that I made the summary for you. The actual enacted budget is in the materials that I gave you in the August 31st staff report. That enacted budget is a 7-page, very detailed budget that gives a history of the last two budgets. What I tried to do in this green sheet was just summarize where all the money that the commission works with comes from. So the major sources are the general fund, the special funds, which are listed below, which include the whale tail grants, whale tail state operations, which is for staffing and facilities, the Coastal Act Services Fund, which is the permit fees that the commission receives, and that state operations, that pays for part of the rent and part of the operations of the commission. The Protect Our Coast and Oceans Fund, that's the tax checkoff fund. So some of the, wherever it says state operations, that's either for staffing, rent, or any of the kind of normal operations. Local assistance means grants, money that goes out to others. The State Coastal Conservancy, VRA, if you recall, last year the commission received a 3-year allocation from the violation remediation account for 2 staff members to augment the enforcement team. So we have that for this year and 1 more year. And then we'll be working with finance to see what happens next with that. The California Environmental License Plate Fund, that's $55,000 that was added to help with the marketing for the whale tail plate. The sales of the whale tail plate have gone down because of competition from other plates, and we're trying to do whatever we can to rev up those sales. So we also appreciate any commissioner's thoughts on that. The Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, the legislature and the governor last year gave the commission $1.5 million that it could be spent over 2 years, and an additional $1.5 million that was in this year's budget that covers 2 years. We've worked out with the Department of Finance. We're splitting that money half and half for local assistance and half to make sure that we have the staffing that we have. We have enough funding to keep the staff we have to work with local coastal programs activities in local governments. So that money is very important in it, but it has to be used only for things related to greenhouse gas reduction or climate resiliency planning. It cannot be used for other items that aren't related to that because of the source of the funding. So then if you go down on the green sheet, the other major source of funding that we have is the Federal Trust Fund, which is really the federal grants from NOAA. And as you recall, on the first day of this meeting, you authorized passing through money to BCDC and the State Coastal Conservancy, and that's included in this money. So our budget looks like we have a little more money than we actually have because we passed through those money. So our total allowable, well then reimbursements, I'm sorry, is the last major source of funding, and that's from contracts with other agencies mainly. Caltrans, Department of Fish and Game for whale, for oil spill prevention work, and a little bit from the State Water Board for some water work. So that's another source. We can only, that's just an authorization, that reimbursement line. That is the amount that we've been authorized to spend. We can only collect that money if we actually do the work. And sometimes the work doesn't come in or the timing is such. So we may not actually spend that $2 million, $2,868,000. So the total funding that we have available if we do the work, if the grants come in, is the $28,843,000. So that's where we are for this year. We have 172 authorized positions. When you're seeing this thing of budget position transparency, Department of Finance has worked out this sort of complicated method of looking at the averages from previous years to how many positions you actually had filled to estimate what they think you're going to have filled. We actually have about 168 positions filled right this minute. And over the course of the year, we'll probably not ever get to the 172 because we don't have full funding for all positions. The way the structure works, there is the Department of Finance assumes that you're going to have people leaving and coming back in at lower rates when people retire and the like. So no positions are fully funded at the maximum rate. So you're always kind of juggling around to make sure that you have enough funding to do that. So that's where the current budget is. And then I wanted to go through in the staff report that was in detail. The other key thing that happened this year, and that's in the general fund state operations, is the Coastal Commission's office in San Francisco, which has been there for 28 years, and Commissioner Peskin has been very helpful with us with that. We've been told we have to move from our building that we've been in for 28 years, and we're working closely with the Department of Finance and Department of General Services to find another location. It has been the most amazing experience for me. It is a ruthless market, incredibly difficult. We're in negotiations right now with a building near our existing location, so we're hoping that that's going to work out. We have 100% compliance of every single staff person either riding their bikes, walking, or taking public transit. And so the location of where we are in San Francisco is very, very important. If we move to another location that doesn't have that access to all the different kinds of public transit, it would be very difficult. We know we would lose staff. So Director Ainsworth and I are very emphatic about keeping in a place that we can keep that public transit. And we've had a lot of support from the Department of General Services, Department of Finance, to try to do that. So I'm hoping I'll have good news for you at the next meeting that we have a lease, but we're not there yet. So those are the major changes from this year. And then we're also in the process now of working on the next year's budget, which is the 1920 budget. When you're doing budget change proposals, you start out with a baseline budget every year from the previous year, and then you build on that budget, change it by the legislative acts or the governor, or our request to have budget change proposals. And those are confidential processes during the deliberation of the legislature and the Department of Finance. I am able to share those with the budget subcommittee, and I have done that. We had quite a few suggestions that we submitted. Because this is a transition year, there'll be a new governor. This is true for all agencies, not just the commission. Commissioner Gibson can attest to that. We're working closely with the Resources Agency as well. They have to okay our procedures and moving forward. There's not going to be very many new things that happen in this governor's budget that comes out in January. The idea is you wait for the new governor to make whatever proposals go forward. So I expect it to be a very busy budget process after January through the spring. And I think that really covers most of the comments I want to make today, and I wanted to see if Commissioner Groom had anything she would like to add, and I do want to thank her and Commissioner Loewenow again. It's been very, very helpful to have them follow the process.
No, except to thank Susan for all the work that she's been doing and then relaying it to us. It just does seem like a Byzantine process, mm-hmm. but I guess we have to get used to it.
Okay.
So any questions or comments? There's nothing that commission needs to do, but I'm happy to give you any more details that you want throughout the year, and we'll keep you informed as the process continues.
Great. Thank you. Thanks very much.
All right. That takes us to item 5, which is the consent calendar for the San Diego Coast District. There's 3 applications for residential projects in the Mission Beach community of San Diego. Conditions are acceptable to the applicants. There's no known opposition, so we ask the commission to approve those on the consent calendar.
Okay. Any ex partes? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Second.
Care to speak to your motions? All right. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous yes on the consent calendar? Seeing none, it's approved.
Thank you. Item 6 is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District, Orange County. There's 1 waiver being reported for removal of unpermitted biking trails in a habitat preserve adjacent to the ranch in Laguna Beach. There's been no comments in opposition to any of these items, so we're asking for the Commission's concurrence on the Executive Director report.
Okay. Any ex partes? Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Thank you. Item 7 is for applications being moved from regular calendar to the consent calendar for the South Coast District. We have 2 applications. There's item 9A, which is for work on the Metropolitan Water District's water line that crosses San Diego Creek in the Newport Beach area. Staff did do an addendum on that matter, but we were working with the applicant on some minor changes to the conditions, and I do want to bring those up on the screen there. The first change, which is to add the words "are present on the project site," that was actually in one of our addendum. The new addition is at the very end of the last sentence, which is just a clarification that any identified species shall be flagged for avoidance except for those specific areas where the plants are permitted to be removed pursuant to Coastal Development Permit 517-272. And with that change, the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation. So we're asking that item be moved to consent. And then we also have item 10A, which was to repair some piles on a dock in Dana Point Harbor. That was an amendment. So conditions are acceptable to the applicants, and we're asking those items be moved to and approved on the consent calendar.
Okay. Any ex partes? Any objection to a unanimous concurrence of the deputy director's report?
No, this is in the consent calendar.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was 6-7. Yes. Motion, please.
Move consent.
Okay. Any objection to unanimous consent? We approve the consent calendar.
Thank you. That takes us to item 7.1A, and there is a staff PowerPoint on this matter. So item 7A is an amendment to the implementation plan portion of the City of Newport Beach's LCP. You get the second slide. The IP amendment corrects errors on certain setback maps on Lido Isle in Newport Bay. The side and front setbacks labeled on 8 residential properties on Lido Isle were mixed up or not identified on the maps. So all of these lots, though, are developed in accordance with the proposed setbacks, which were originally established by the city in 1951, so there isn't a significant change here. The executive directors determined that the proposed LCP amendment is minor, and we're asking for the commission's concurrence on that.
All right. Any objection to unanimous concurrence on the executive director's determination of a minor amendment? Seeing none, we approve.
Thank you. Item 8A is a new appeal filed by Mr. Mark Fudge of a permit granted by the City of Laguna Beach to Merrick Leckie, authorizing a lot line adjustment to modify property lines between two commonly owned vacant parcels at 749 Marlin Drive in an undeveloped sensitive canyon in Laguna Beach. The appellant raises a number of concerns with the proposal, which the commission staff determined raise a substantial issue as to conformity with the LCP. For instance, the appellant asserts that the lot line adjustment will allow for greater intensity of development on these lots within and adjacent to environmentally sensitive habitat area, and that the city didn't properly apply the relevant resource protection policies of the LCP. When properly applied, the project as proposed may be inconsistent with the LCP. So commission staff determined that further investigation is needed to assess whether the project is consistent with the LCP. So staff is recommending the commission find substantial issue, and unless three or more commissioners want to hold a full hearing on the matter, substantial issue will be found. And it's my understanding that the applicant is not objecting to the substantial issue finding.
Okay. Do three or more commissioners want to find substantial issue? We have a hearing on it. No. Okay. So do we need this motion, or is substantial issue found?
Substantial issue is presumed. So okay. The matter
so
will be continued
to. We don't need the motion. Okay, great.
That's
thank
correct.
You.
All right, so item 9A was moved to consent, and item 10A was moved to consent, so that takes us on to the San Diego Coast District. Item 11, which is the Deputy Director's report for the San Diego Coast District. There's three waivers for development in Del Mar, Carlsbad, and San Diego, and an immaterial amendment for utility maintenance in Carlsbad. There have been no public comment in opposition to any of these items, so staff's recommending or asking for concurrence of the executive director's report.
Okay. Any ex partes? Any objection to a unanimous concurrence of the deputy director's report? Seeing no objection, we approve the report.
Thank you. Item 12 was to move items to consent, but we don't have any items on the San Diego Coast District to do that, so that takes us to item 13A, which is a request to extend the 60-day time limit for a commission action to act on Oceanside's LCP amendment to update the regulations for nonconforming uses or structures. We are targeting a hearing in the hall in the fall for this item, so city is in agreement with the extension, and staff recommends the commission extend the 60-day time limit for 1 year.
Any ex partes? Do I have a motion?
I'm sure. I'll move that the commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on the City of Oceanside LCP amendment number LCP 6 OCN 1800531 for 1 year and ask for a yes vote.
Care to speak to your motion? Okay. Any objection to unanimous yes? Seeing no objection, the motion passes.
Thank you. Item 13B is another request to extend the 60-day time limit. This is on Oceanside's LCP amendment to revise their telecommunications regulations in response to the Federal Spectrum Act. Again, we're targeting a hearing in the fall. City's in agreement, so staff recommends the commission extend the item for 1 year.
Motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move that the commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on the City of Oceanside LCP amendment, LCP 6 OCN 180541. Got the right one, for 1 year and ask for a yes vote.
Second. Any objection to unanimous yes on the extension, time extension? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you. That takes us to item 13C, which is the City of Oceanside's LCP amendment to address accessory dwelling units. The new ordinance addresses permitting procedures and development standards for ADUs. It also prohibits use of both the newly permitted ADU and the primary home from being used as a short-term rental. For the most part, the city's amendment is consistent with its certified land use plan. However, the proposed amendment doesn't implement the LCP's required habitat buffers and geologic setbacks. Also, the ordinance didn't address the state law's mandate to approve ADUs ministerially and not require a public hearing. So staff's recommending the commission deny the amendment as proposed and approve it with suggested modifications that require conformance with the resource and geologic setbacks and require the ministerial processing. These are issues we've seen in a number of ADU ordinances from local governments, and staff's recommended modifications are generally consistent with the approach that's been taken by the commission in those prior matters. So the modifications can be found on page 6 of the staff report. I do want to bring up item slide 2 and point out that when a new ADU is sought and approved under the proposed ordinance, the city's approval would include a prohibition on the use of the primary and accessory units as short-term rentals on the site. The city's justification for this is that if the new laws regarding ADUs are intended to provide additional housing, allowing either the existing home or the proposed accessory unit to be used as a short-term rental, it does not ensure that additional housing is provided. So, for instance, if a property owner is permitted to construct an ADU but then rents out the primary structure as a short-term rental, then there's no resultant increase in the housing stock. So the city proposes to secure the net increase in housing by prohibiting both the primary and the ADU on the lot when an ADU is being built on the lot. So this only applies to those cases where a new ADU is being proposed and permitted. So the commission's been careful to assure that short-term rentals remain a part of the range of overnight accommodations available to promote coastal visitation. And the city of Oceanside does have a relatively large inventory of overnight accommodations that include a range of affordability. And if I could, on this slide, you can see that the city's land use plan contains a specific policy that requires the city maintain at least 375 lower cost hotel and motel units and 220 recreational vehicle camping sites within the coastal zone. The city's most recent inventory of such units identified about 1,300 low cost accommodations in the city, including 8 hotels, 2 RV parks, 173 camping spaces in the city's small craft harbor. So given the city's justification and the existing protections for affordable overnight accommodations that are part of the LCP, we think we can support the limited prohibition on short-term rentals in conjunction with the construction of a new ADU. However, the city is working on an ordinance to address short-term rentals citywide. So it's important to note that when they do so, we will be looking at all of the short-term rentals comprehensively, including the provisions that are would be authorized today. So staff's recommending the commission first deny the implementation plan as submitted and approve it with suggested modifications. The city's in agreement with staff recommendation.
Okay. First, is there any ex partes? Commissioner Brownsey has a question.
Yeah, I just... Thank you, staff, for covering that particular issue, because I was a teeny bit queasy about that issue, and so I appreciate that you clarifying that given the hotel stock, the required minimum, but that the entire policy with respect to all housing on the short-term rental will be coming back for review. So thank you very much.
Okay. Where are we now? Do I have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make
it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move that the Commission reject implementation program amendment number LCP6 OCN 18-00551 for the City of Oceanside as submitted and ask for a yes vote.
Would you care to speak to your motion?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. The maker of the motion is asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
I move that the Commission certify the implementation program amendment number LCP 6 OCN 185501 for the City of Oceanside if it is modified as suggested in the staff report and ask for a yes vote.
Second.
Second. So the makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you. That takes us to item 13D, which completes the process for certification of Carlsbad's LCP amendment to incorporate certain use prohibitions into the LCP. The Commission approved the amendment with suggested modifications, and we are reporting back the City's acceptance. So staff recommends the Commission concur that the City's action is legally adequate.
Any objection to unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Item 13E is a request to extend the 90-day time limit for Commission action on Encinitas's LCP amendment to allow a reduction in the number of travel lanes on North Coast Highway in conjunction with a streetscape project. We are targeting a full hearing on this matter at the next meeting in October, along with the companion appeals. The City is in agreement with the extension. However, staff did receive a letter from a resident suggesting that the time be limited to the next local hearing. But again, these LCP time extensions are one time, and we do want to allow the full year for unforeseen circumstances. So, and the City is in agreement with the staff recommendations. So staff's recommending Commission extend the 90-day time limit for 1 year.
Any ex partes? Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I'll move the Commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Encinitas LCP amendment LCP 6 ENC 18341 for 1 year and ask for a yes vote.
Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you. Item 13F is Encinitas LCP amendment to address ADUs consistent with state law. The amendment modifies the development standards to related to lot coverage, floor area ratio, setbacks, and parking requirements, and will apply citywide. Like other ADU ordinances we've seen and corrected, this one doesn't continue to implement the LCP's important public view protection requirements and habitat buffers and geologic setbacks, so staff's recommending suggested modifications to address those. Also, as proposed, the City ordinance will allow a reduced setback when an ADU is built above a garage or within an accessory building constructed prior to January 1st, 2017, which is the effective date of the statewide ADU law, AB 2299. The effect of this language is that the ADUs added above garages built after 2017 would have to meet the applicable zone's habitable structure setback instead of the reduced 5-foot setback. And conversion of the existing space, of any existing space built after that same date, would not be entitled to the 0-foot setback. So these provisions that were incorporated by the City were to address privacy concerns raised by some residents, but we think would curtail a housing incentive that was provided for in the state legislation. City didn't adopt any findings based on its certified LCP to identify any coastal resource protection measures to support that change. And given the language in AB 2299, we think this change is inconsistent with the goal of increasing the supply of affordable housing that the legislation is trying to achieve. And with the Coastal Act provisions that encourage affordable housing. So the suggested mod eliminates the reference to the January 1st, 2017 restriction in order to ensure that the regulations meet the intention of the state law. We did receive one letter in opposition to the matter, but after contacting that person, learned that they were more concerned with changes to the state ADU law that are actually on the governor's desk right now and not on this specific LCP amendment. So City does support the staff recommendation, and the appropriate motions and resolutions are on page 4 of the staff report.
Any ex partes? Do we have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move that the Commission reject the implementation program amendment LCP 6 ENC 18035-1 for the City of Encinitas as submitted. Ask for a yes vote.
Care to speak to your motion? The maker of the motion asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission certify the implementation program amendment number LCP 6 ENC 18351 for the City of Encinitas if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, and ask for a yes vote.
Any objection to a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, motion passes.
Thank you. Item 13G is the City of San Diego's 11th annual update to their land development code, which is a part of their LCP. The update consists of 46 separate changes and corrections to the code. Upon review, there's one item of concern, and staff recommends denial of the amendment as submitted and approval with one modification regarding brush management. The certified LCP currently requires that brush management on all premises that contain native or naturalized vegetation within 100 feet of a structure, including environmentally sensitive lands. The LCP divides the brush management work into two areas, Zone 1 and Zone 2. Zone 1 is the area adjacent to the structure and consists of pavement or permanently irrigated ornamentals. And Zone 2 is the area between Zone 1 and native vegetation and consists of thinned, non-irrigated vegetation. Under the LCP, the width of Zones 1 and 2 are established at 100 feet, and the default brush management configuration is 35 feet for Zone 1 and 65 feet for Zone 2. And the LCP requires that brush management be included in the development plans to identify and try to avoid impacts to adjacent habitat areas. The 11th update includes an amendment to the current allowance to substitute expanded Zone 1 width for a reduced Zone 2. Currently, the LCP allows Zone 2 to be decreased 1.5 feet for every 1 foot increase in Zone 1, as long as the minimum 30-foot wide Zone 2 is retained. And under this provision, the default 35-foot Zone 1 could be increased to 55 feet and Zone 2 reduced to 35 feet for a total brush management area of still 90 feet. This exception recognized the superior firebreak created by an expanded Zone 1, but still required at least a 90-foot setback from habitat. With the proposed amendment, the minimum 30-foot wide Zone 2 would be deleted. So Zone 1 could be increased up to approximately 80 feet in width for a complete elimination of Zone 2, resulting in a total brush management area of only 80 feet. So on its face, the possible reduction of total brush management area appears to both create a superior fire break in expanded Zone 1 and decrease potential impacts on vegetated areas, but staff believes the reliance on the proposed amendment could lead to development patterns that will cause resource impacts in the face of global warming, increased risk of wildfires, and more restrictive fire regulation. So if a development took advantage of the city's proposed amendment, they could site a structure 80 feet from ESHA, barring other applicable habitat buffers. Concern is that should another wildfire of the severity that San Diego County has experienced in the past, such as the Cedar Fire or the Witch Fire, occur again, that the fire marshal will order more restrictive brush management requirements and increase any reduced fuel mod zones to the typical 100 feet or even more for all developments. So in this scenario, if a structure built just 80 feet from ESHA, the brush management would then encroach into those resource areas. So given the drying conditions that California is experiencing, the ever more severe wildfires that have occurred, and in recognition that remaining development sites are highly constrained, staff believes that designing and siting the development from the beginning with a larger brush management area and larger overall setback from sensitive habitat is the right approach. It's important to note that while the Commission made many concessions on the brush management standards for existing development in 2007, it also found that for new development and subdivisions, a more rigorous and restrictive set of provisions were warranted when protected open space or ESHA was involved. So staff's recommended modifications would simply maintain the current brush management provisions on Zone 1 and Zone 2 and keep the 30-foot minimum Zone 2 brush management setback within the coastal zone. Staff believes this will better protect coastal resources from development impacts without unduly burdening the ability of property owners to develop their properties and protect them from fire risk. So with the suggested modifications, staff believes the 11th update as modified can be found in conformance with the land use plan of the City of San Diego. And I do want to point out there's one letter in your packet from the Save Our Heritage Foundation supporting the historic preservation incentives that are included in this update. And the motions for the matter can be found on page 4 of the staff report, and that concludes our comments.
Okay. And the city is okay with this as well?
And the city is in agreement
with
staff recommendation.
Any ex partes? Do I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move that the Commission reject the implementation program amendment number LCP 6 SAN 18471 for the City of San Diego, certified LCP as submitted, and ask for a yes vote.
The makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission certify the implementation program amendment number LCP 6 SAN 18471 for the City of San Diego, if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, and ask for a yes vote.
Any objection to unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Item 14A was postponed, so that takes us to 14B, and there is a staff PowerPoint on this item. 14B is a request by the San Diego County Regional Airport Authority to amend Coastal Development Permit 6915, which was originally approved by the Commission in 2009. The original permit allowed for the expansion of Terminal 2 at the San Diego International Airport. The subject amendment applications for after-the-fact approval to add a little over 40,000 square feet to Terminal 2 for a relocated and expanded federal inspection service facility associated with the customs inspections for international flights. The unpermitted development occurred on the site between May 2017 and June 2018. Slide 2. San Diego International Airport is located north of Harbor Drive. Oh, can I have slide 2, please? The airport's located north of Harbor Drive, east of McCain Road, and the boat channel south of the Marine Corps Recruit Depot and west of Pacific Highway in San Diego. Terminal 2 is located on the western portion of the airport and is circled on the slide in red. Slide 3, please. So the original CDP approved or issued for the expansion of Terminal 2 included updates to the international arrivals and federal inspection services, including an approximate 16,000 square foot primary inspection area on the third level, 43,000 square foot secondary inspection area, and 11,000 square foot international inbound baggage area on the first floor. However, since international air flights were not confirmed by many air carriers at that time, the international arrivals and federal inspection service improvements were not constructed. Instead, the Terminal 2 expansion was constructed to about 448,000 square feet with space to construct the Federal Inspection Service elements at a later date. Slide four, please. So in May 2017, the Airport Authority began construction of interior remodeling and an addition to accommodate the Federal Inspection Service area. However, the addition was not constructed in conformance with the plans approved by the Commission in 2009 for the expansion. Instead, the addition was redesigned and constructed in compliance with new standards for Federal Inspection Service facilities, which added 20,572 square feet to what was originally authorized. And because the constructed addition is not in conformance with the original plans, it is unpermitted, and the Airport Authority is requesting to amend the original CDP to include the after-the-fact approval of the addition. The project is not expected to increase the number of vehicle trips to the airport or demand for more parking, and therefore would not impact public access to the coast. The redesigned facility was constructed on land that was previously developed with an empty shell and loading dock during the 2013 expansion, and no sensitive resources were impacted. Finally, the addition matches the architectural design aesthetic of the existing Terminal 2 building and does not block views towards or along San Diego Bay, so there are no visual resource impact issues. Slide five, please. So the authority also proposes to update special condition number one of the original permit to align with the required greenhouse gas emissions monitoring reports with current practice by requiring the calculation of all scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions and clarifying that the Airport Authority is only responsible for operational emissions associated with scope 1 and 2 emissions, which originate from sources that are owned or controlled by the Airport Authority. Additional special conditions approved by the Commission in its original permit action remain unchanged and in effect. Slide six. So the proposed amendment can be found consistent with the Commission's original approval and Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act. So staff's recommending the Commission approved the project as conditioned. And that concludes the staff's comments.
Okay, thank you very much. Any ex partes? Can I have a motion, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that the Commission approve the proposed amendment to Coastal Development Permit Application Number 60915A1, subject to the conditions set forth in the staff recommendation, and ask for a yes vote.
Is there any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote?
Madam Chair, none. I would just ask to make a brief comment to my motion real quick.
I
would just to staff, thanks for your indulgence on this item. I was concerned when this was first docketed that given the fact that the footprint had changed and the time had elapsed between the original CDP and the fact that they were not in conformance with what was approved, I had to have an understanding of what had kind of broken down, and my respectful recommendation through the chair and Mr. Ainsworth would be I hope our staff is looking at whatever's going on between us and that agency. Typically, you'll see incidental improvements in infrastructure, even from government agencies that get overlooked. They go unpermitted. We have to do an after the fact. But for an agency like the Airport Authority, that's a little bit of a concern for this commissioner. So I would just encourage us to figure out what's going on. That's all. And I'm happy to support, of course.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Do we have any objection to unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the motion passes.
All right, that concludes the regular agenda items today.
Yeah, we have a closed session.
Right.
We need to.
Do you want to do it in here? Or can we?
Yeah, I think that's
okay.
Good. If everyone could
clear
the room, please.
Let's take a tiny little break while everybody gets set up and. Going to report out of closed session. Uh-huh. Mr. Peterson is going to report out of closed session.
Thank you very much. The Commission met in closed session today and received litigation information and advice regarding the following matters: Alford versus Coastal Commission, Anthem Sales and Management LLC v. City of San Clemente, City of Del Mar v. Coastal Commission, Pacific Palisades Residents Association v. City of Los Angeles, Friends Artists Neighbors of Elkhorn Slough v. Commission, Friends of Children's Pool v. City of San Diego, Fudge v. Coastal Commission, Green v. Coastal Commission, In Re Border Infrastructure Environmental Litigation, Cone v. Coastal Commission, Mission Beach Residents for Responsible Development v. Coastal Commission, Pappas v. State Coastal Conservancy. Commission received litigation information and advice and provided direction regarding San Diego Unified Port District versus Coastal Commission. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're adjourned.